Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Betches Media presents...
I would like to speak to America's men for 1 minute.
That slacker barista.
I start getting full of emotion.
Now we're going to build this new bridge here.
Can I provide a definition?
Mm-hmm.
No, I can't.
Betches Up Podcast.
Like, how are people surviving?
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Millie Tamaras.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. We are off of a long weekend in this office. We were off for the Jewish New Year, of course, the only New Year. So how were your weekends? Because according to the GOP, as we will discuss, we're all narrowly avoiding fentanyl-laced everything.
Well, yeah, I had to stay inside to avoid touching a fentanyl-laced doorknob or keeping my mouth open for too long and someone throwing fentanyl in my mouth. You never know. In these cities... In these Democrat-run cities, anything can happen. Anything can happen.
I smashed a lantern fly and fentanyl straight to the face.
Oh, shit. Yeah, I stayed in watching Australian teen dramas because they say fentanyl differently there.
Fentanyl?
Fentanyl? How do they say it?
Fentanyl.
Fentanyl.
It's not funny, but it's a little funny. Oh no, fentanyl.
That's hard.
Oh no. I love, you know, people come to Betches Up for the nuanced, respectful political commentary, respectful global citizenship.
We take opioid abuse actually much seriously than these GOP clowns who are joking and misusing it.
Yeah.
So I saw a couple of these stories come up yesterday. I thought it could be a not fun way to start, but just an interesting way to start. There is just so much Republican hysteria about fentanyl this week. I was saying before we started recording, it seems like the new critical race theory. It's like they're like, how can we come up with something that seems super scary? That's like, it's coming for your kids. Greg Abbott keeps yapping about how Beto O'Rourke wants open borders. House candidates across the Southwest keep boasting, not even just the Southwest. I feel like there's also guys like bros in like Ohio who are like the fentanyl at the border or like Michigan.
Everyone's
it's like,
sir,
you're in Michigan. Actually, we do have a Michigan bro to discuss today. But House candidates are remarking. My favorite thing that they do is when they talk about how much fentanyl has been seized at the southern border, as if that's like, as if they're not confirming the effectiveness of the current program. Like they're like, enough fentanyl was seized at the border to kill 40,000 infants. And it's like, well, good thing that the system works.
Yeah, I'm
there
glad
are,
they
there
seized
are no
it.
Issues.
It seems like it was seized.
Also, fact checkers worth noting say that, by fact checkers, I mean that guy, Dale, I can't remember his last name, on CNN, and he does the really fast fact checking. He said that most of the fentanyl that comes into the U.S. from the southern border is American citizens bringing it in. There is a fentanyl problem, a serious issue, a very dangerous issue with fentanyl being in a lot of drugs. And I feel like that is largely the fault of the local drug dealers who are trying to make more money and trying to cut product with really dangerous drugs and sourcing that themselves. I said this before we started recording, but it is not the young children from Honduras who are seeking asylum who are grabbing up, you know, fentanyl as they go just to make a quick buck when they get here.
And that's been true. Like when we go back, I just watched Netflix has a really good documentary on crack right now and like the crack epidemic. And it's like that has been true of other drug war things in the past. Like that's what this is bringing up to me because, you know, you look back to the 80s and they were like, crack is so dangerous and it's flooding all of our like cities or whatever. And it's like, well, it was Americans that were facilitating that and it was like, you know, working with drug cartels certainly to do it, but it's a much bigger problem and it's not the immigrants coming across the border that are doing that. It's a much more sophisticated top level operation that creates that.
Elise, you think a 7-year-old that's coming from Guatemala is not cutting an Ohio guy's cocaine with fentanyl so that they can get more of a profit? You're saying that it's systemic? Yeah, okay.
My understanding is they don't bring that much stuff.
No, I think famously things are taken. It's just a bizarre reason to cause hysteria.
This is bringing up for me remember the caravans?
Yeah.
When in the 2018 midterms, everything was about these migrant caravans and these caravans of migrants. Fucking the day after the midterms, we did not hear one peep about any more migrant. Right. Well, actually, like during the Trump presidency, at least, like there was not anything about those migrant caravans. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, I don't know. What are these people like? Okay, we don't want open borders. Fine. Like, what do we want for the future of this country? To be like closed? No one's having children anymore. No one can afford a house. Like,
no one can do. There's too many jobs that no one will do.
There's too many jobs no one will do. People trying to come here and get jobs because we've destabilized their economies back home. It's like, what do you people want? You want to get your F-1-350, whatever the fuck, and like
F-1-350. They wish.
Yeah, your F-1. Yeah, your 350.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because I think you're right. You're catching them because it's not really about the borders. Like, they're using this fentanyl line on everything. So last week, a clip went viral. I think it was somebody talking to Michigan Attorney General candidate Matt DiPerno, a Republican. I think they were talking to him at like maybe a campaign event or like some sort of gathering, and they were recording him. And he said in a recording last week that Plan B, first of all, he didn't know what it was. The guy was like, what are we going to do to stop the flow of Plan B? The guy was like, Plan B?
Well, I bet anyone
not,
who's
that?
Ever dated him knows what it is. So
yeah, I know. I'm like, okay, so Matt DiPerno's never had a fun night. Shit's got a little bit out of hand.
Every single woman who's ever encountered you.
Yeah, they all know what Plan B is.
Biggest red flag is not knowing
what Plan B is. What it is.
But then he and the guy, I think, clarified like the morning after pill or the contraceptive. And this guy, I'm not sure if he then said it should be banned in Michigan. You have to stop it at the border, much like fentanyl, just straight up compared it to fentanyl. And then lastly, Kevin McCarthy lamented I believe this was in the speech where he was sort of spelling out the campaign platform. He sort of had like an interesting self-own here as well. Let's listen to that clip.
We will secure our borders so your kids won't have to fear wondering that they're buying fentanyl and are going to OD.
It's just this does imply that all parents are aware that their kids are buying hard drugs at all times.
Yeah, I mean, it's just so funny because like the drugs in the Halloween candy of it all, like that is a fear that comes up and is disproven and comes up and is disproven and all of this stuff. And like, again, like you said, fentanyl is actually a really serious issue, but we don't get any closer to solving that issue by pretending that it's children are the ones who are the victims. What's happening and what's really sad is that fentanyl is getting laced into
ketamine.
Other people's drugs that people use recreationally, number one. So, like, if you actually care about fentanyl deaths, then maybe you should promote fentanyl testing strips for recreational
drug users. Yeah, I'd like to see Kevin McCarthy share those on his Instagram story.
Yeah, absolutely fucking not. But those do exist for anyone who's listening that may partake in recreational drugs. You can test all of them for fentanyl. That's really something important. There's Narcan training that you can do. Mm-hmm. Also, people are turning to fentanyl because they're getting addicted to opioids that they were prescribed and then they can't get them anymore. And so they turn to the street and go to fentanyl. So it's like, it is a real problem, but it has nothing to do with fucking kids getting fentanyl laced candy. No. That's not what the issue is. But for them to talk about what the actual issue is, then they would have to propose solutions that are things that would never come out of their mouth, which is like harm reduction approaches for actual drug users, rehabilitation for people, like actually getting to the root of why this has happened, which they never want to do. They just want to scare you. Yeah. Like I feel like I see a story every week that's like police in hazmat suits enter school to confiscate fentanyl, as if like you can touch fentanyl and immediately overdose on fentanyl, which isn't even how that happens.
That's like a meme online, is like all these police, like, quote unquote, have gotten fentanyl poisoning from touching it. And really, like, it's these cops that like dip into the stash and get in trouble and whatever. And then, yeah. And like you said, like, it is a big problem that people are, you know, there are solutions. And but that's the thing. It's like, the fentanyl issue is a big issue. There are also big issues that have nothing to do with fentanyl. Like, the fact that that's like part of their political platform, it's like, we have an insane housing crisis. Rent is so expensive all over the country. We have really bad climate things. Let's talk about student loans, all of that. There are actual, you know, and like, ignoring these very real problems, making up new ones and with solutions that have nothing to do with the actual problem. But or the solution is to close the border. Okay, good.
Yeah. And just to drive up xenophobia that helps them. Yeah.
Yes. And with the DePerno, this might be a little off topic. I'm sorry, I'm going to go on a little tangent. But with the DePerno, with the Plan B comment, there was a little comment by Mark Lamont Hill yesterday, because Judy Gold was on MSNBC and they were talking about the 15-week abortion ban by Lindsey Graham. And, you know, Judy Gold brings up that Lindsey Graham's never seen a vagina, has never had any kids, all that stuff.
She said that on MSNBC.
She said that on MSNBC. Mark Lamont Hill was like, this is so disgraceful. Why does this have to do with anything? And then there was a discourse on, like, is that off limits to say, you know? And it's like, this man, I feel like it is relevant. I've said something very similarly on this podcast multiple times.
I feel like Ray Sani let the cat out of the bag with this podcast, acknowledging that there are gay rumors about Lindsey Graham.
yeah, exactly.
She said he doesn't even like pussy, and we didn't take it out. But no, it's really interesting. I think this is it's definitely a bigger topic for like a probably hour long conversation with gay people.
I'm sorry for bringing that up.
Yeah. So I don't want to go too into it, but I think it's definitely a conversation, especially when people are actively oppressing like other marginalized groups. Speaking of, we'll discuss some races today that have to do with abortion rights and that marginalization. So there are some really, really interesting and important races throughout the Southwest, in Arizona and New Mexico. I don't think Nevada is technically the Southwest, so I'm sorry, but those ones are important too. But specifically both of those states. It has the energy.
New Mexico is not the Southwest?
No, Nevada.
Oh.
I'm not sure if Nevada is.
Oh, Nevada.
Yeah.
I feel like.
Maybe the southern part. But both of those races have governors that are up and they have open Senate seats. And Arizona in particular is pretty consequential, because last week a female judge did let through an abortion ban from 1901. And the governor candidate, Katie Hobbs, she was the Secretary of State. She was the Secretary of State during the 2020 election. So, like, she knows how to hold the line while Republicans are really pressuring her. Their current guy, Doug Ducey, he's either term limited or just not running again. I'm not sure which. I think he's term limited. But her Republican opponent is crazy. I think she was, like, a news anchor. And she, like, runs ads saying that she doesn't believe women, men and women should be equal. So that race is wild and worth watching. But we'll also start with some Senate races there. Unfortunately, Senator Sinema is not up this election cycle. Senator Sinema, to me, like, even more than Republicans, really shows me how 6 years can stretch. Like, we don't have a chance to replace her. It feels like she's been in there forever, and it feels like it's going to take forever to have a chance to primary her. Obviously, she's a Democrat. She's a Democratic vote. But as we'll discuss next, bizarre behavior for a Democrat. So Kyrsten Sinema, Democratic senator from Arizona, famously a woman, famously a bisexual, promised to be a cool liberal. She spent the week intellectually 69ing Mitch McConnell. McConnell hosted Sinema at the McConnell Center at his alma mater, the University of Louisville. He's like a hero there. It's weird. Like, there's like paraphernalia related to him. I think it's like at his fraternity or his club. Yeah. It's just weird. And again, like, we talked about this with Joe Manchin. It's like, I'm not saying that only men who fit a particular standard of masculinity, of performing masculinity, ought to be celebrated. But I just don't think Mitch McConnell fulfills any of the criteria of being like celebrated for his masculinity in any kind
of way. I do think when you're at University of Louisville, you might be like, well, this is, I feel like universities are always like touting their big alum. And yeah. I don't know, not, I mean, I don't know shit about University of Louisville, so I don't want to shade them unnecessarily, but McConnell might be what they have. And it seems like he donated enough to get a center. I know at University of Delaware, when I first got there, I joined the poli-sci like department, they would always be like, Joe Biden and Chris Christie went here. And by the end of my 4 years, they were like, and Joe Biden went here. Yeah. They just dropped the Chris Christie. They decided we actually don't need that one. I don't know. Maybe if Louisville gets another, if any University of Louisville students are listening, maybe you could overtake Mitch McConnell and they won't have to do
fabulous
this anymore.
Idea. Just from a cursory Google, I did see that some officials at the university did publicly disagree with him when he came out against the 1619 project. So it's probably like every university. Like there's any university that seems super fratty, there's also theater nerds there. There's also poli-sci nerds there. There is also all of those people there who are like, you know, raising the alarm too and often able to like convince the staff there. But like there's definitely a faction there. I read about it in like, I can't remember what book it was, but just it was like setting the scene of like a particular group of men at that university that just idolize him.
Okay, well, those people probably, there's pockets of those idiots at every university. Also, like, if you're an alum at University of Louisville, like, how much is a building there? It can't be that much. It's not Harvard. It's
you want to buy out? Should we buy out the McConnell Center?
You should buy out that fucking center.
Yeah, let's go fund me to change it to the Betches Sub Center.
The Betches Sub
Center. Who does he hate the most? The Persistence Center. The Center for Women's Persistence.
The Betches Sub Center for Persisting Nevertheless.
Yes, oh my God. But what I was going to say is, like, I don't understand. Like, I'm not a Republican. Sorry to disappoint.
Shocking.
I don't understand idolizing. Like, what has Mitch McConnell actually accomplished besides stop? Like, all of his accomplishments are stopping major legislation,
people
stopping progress.
Exactly. People love
that. The courts, yeah.
Yeah, but I'm just like,
I guess the courts and that big tax break, but I'm just like Ronald Reagan. Terrible human being, but I could understand why, like, he actually did evil, many, many evil things, but he did like tangible things that, whatever. I guess Mitch McConnell, I guess, really did push over the abortion thing, like, that was his doing. But I'm just like, this is not a man who has made like actual, like, Mitch McConnell himself did this thing. His whole thing is like stopping. And even the abortion thing, we talk about it all the time. Since they passed that, you know, Roe v. Wade thing, people have been working to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. So that can't even be accredited to, like, Mitch McConnell himself. No. I'm just saying, like, even if I were a Republican, I still don't know if I would, like, worship Mitch McConnell. Yeah.
I mean, I think that some people really like that he was a complete asshole to Barack Obama. So, like, I think they're a fan of the racism, really.
It is.
Like,
it's the racism. Yeah.
I guess there's just more accomplished racists is my thing. I just didn't.
Flashier, too.
Flashier, cooler with swag. I'm just saying, like, of the Republican idolized, that's not the most impressive. But also, idolizing Mitch McConnell at all. Insane.
I think you've already this is not my joke. I don't know if it's your joke, Millie. Somebody has made the joke, like, there's a reason the KKK wore hoods. Was it you that said that?
Oh, yeah, maybe.
Like,
I don't know.
They're never lookers.
What haven't I said on this fucking podcast?
But Arizona, yeah. So it's just a bizarre situation, especially like that an actual Democratic leader is doing this. I mean, even Joe Manchin does not do this. And she just like really rubbed it in. I mean, first of all, he said, I've known Kirsten for 4 years, but she is, in my view, the most effective first term senator I have seen. And just like, you should get your Democrat card revoked if Mitch McConnell is saying this about you. He praised her for being a true moderate and saving the institution of the Senate by not ending the filibuster, which is truly hilarious because that man ended the filibuster for Supreme Court
100%.
As for cinema, she told the crowd she and McConnell shared similar values and had a strong friendship. And despite having more external differences, like he drinks whiskey and she drinks wine. It's very like, she's just very twee. Like I sent this quote. It's like, sounds like a Taylor Swift song. Like she's like, at first glance, we don't have much in common. He drinks bourbon. I drink wine. He's from the Southeast and I'm from the Great Southwest. He wears suits and ties. I wear dresses and these flare sneakers. What? Where are we going with this? Are these your vows?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's very, yeah, this would be cute if what he was standing in the way of wasn't like fundamental rights for people that she supposedly supports. She also, in this same thing, says she supports bringing the filibuster back for all the things he fucking removed the filibuster for. So yeah, I want to know more about who is paying her bills.
Well, him, obviously.
I mean, I need to understand. I think anonymous, I don't know. I know you guys just hacked Iran, so you're busy. But I think once you're done with that, that's more important. But maybe we can hack Kirsten and find out.
Especially because I don't know. Mitch isn't getting like money from his wife because she's not in the administration to like juice the shipping contracts to make her family money.
Her family has a lot of they're fine. She's gotten another fucking scam somewhere.
They're all fine. They're finally into Kirsten Sulemeta. Yeah. Our plans to take over the McConnell Center maybe in jeopardy. But Arizona's other Senate seat is up for grabs this year, with Republican billionaire-backed extremist Blake Masters challenging incumbent and good-natured astronaut and heroic husband to Gabby Giffords, Mark Kelly. Sometimes the contrasts between these candidates are just too good. I mean, Mark Kelly stood by Gabby Giffords when she was shot in the head and recovered. She's still recovering. Like,
You don't fully come back.
Right. She still has like some needs and requires accommodations. And he is a partner that helps her with that. He's an astronaut and his twin brother is an astronaut, which somehow makes it even more delightful that he is an astronaut. His opponent, if you did not know, is this guy named Blake Masters. He's like handpicked by Peter Thiel. He is disturbing. He looks disturbing. It's all disturbing.
He's very evil. He's like, there should be a constitutional amendment banning abortion. I want to privatize Social Security. Like, tech bro, psycho, in Elon Musk's mentions type guy.
Exactly. He's like, has like a venture capital background. He keeps changing his tune on abortion. He has, as Elise said, suggested privatizing Social Security, which is just not popular. People like, it's so dumb that they say that. Like, when we went to the White House, Biden mentioned that several times. It's like, you from your first job that you are able to have that's like on the books, you pay into Social Security. It is insane that these guys would propose getting rid of it. Also, he's like a big weirdo and has said a lot of problematic stuff. Let's listen to a clip of this opposition ad against him.
That guy who just can't stop posting weird stuff, that's Blake Masters. He's called cocaine smugglers heroes, praised the Unabomber.
Thinker that's underrated, Theodore Kaczynski.
And after 9/11, called Americans security-craving sheep. Blake Masters, he's too out there.
Praise the Unabomber.
I see you've had a reaction to the Ted Kaczynski underrated thinker portion. I wonder why.
Why did he praise the Unabomber? Like,
he thinks he had some good ideas.
Okay, so I actually just listened to a whole podcast about the Unabomber.
I had to move off of the camera when you just volunteered about 20 minutes ago. I just watched this Netflix documentary about crack.
About crack. I always have just watched something, but anyway. Yeah.
You gotta send me the link.
I think it was an American Scandal. I think, yes, American Scandal. It's about the Unabomber. And Ted Kaczynski's whole thing, which is interesting for someone who's like a venture capital guy backed by Peter Thiel, tech bro. Ted Kaczynski's whole thing is that technology had ruined society and that we need to go back. That's why he like lived in the woods with no electricity and stuff, that we needed to go back to like original man and like live in the woods. So he targeted universities because he thought that like universities were promoting this like advancement of technology and thinking and all this stuff. So I'm confused as to which aspect of what Ted Kaczynski was up to Blake Masters is connecting with, other than just the bombing of university professors. Like, I don't know if that's what he supports, but yeah, Ted Kaczynski's thing was being anti-technology.
And this guy, like, is technology affiliated, right?
Well, Peter Thiel is backing him. Peter Thiel is PayPal. He's, what else do you do? I mean, Facebook original Venmo. Investor. Yeah.
Okay, okay, I did not know this, but apparently Ted Kaczynski has become, according to Vanity Fair, a cult hero among the young and very online portion of the far right.
How are they discovering, like, his shit without the internet? Like,
talking online about his manifesto? Because I guess I do know that he
and
is,
And they
like,
don't like the Industrial Revolution? I feel like...
Yes, that's what it is.
I'm so confused. We're going to have to do a
deep dive on
this.
Industrial Revolution is bad, and technology is bad, but he is, like, one of the OG manifesto bros. So maybe that's what they like.
Can I confess something? You said Unabomber, and I was like, what does he have? I thought shoe bomber. So I'm like, maybe Blake Masters likes taking off his shoes at the airport. And that's what he like.
I mean, it's that level. I'm confused as to what aspect of Ted Kaczynski's.
I mean, okay. Thing. I'm reading on a blog, and then we'll move on, and I'll do
You're
some actual
get
resources.
So many QAnon ads now, Amanda.
Kaczynski's description of the alienation of people from one another caused by technology aligns with white supremacists' call for solidarity among white people to resist what they regard as the threat of oppression and white genocide. But again, we are where we started. Why? Why is there? I do not see how that aligns.
I'm missing the link between the Industrial Revolution to white nationalism. But maybe it's just like they're kind of looking for whoever.
Ideological inconsistency? Can you imagine?
Yeah. Maybe it's not that deep.
Yeah,
maybe they're just like, he bombed a bunch of people and has a beard. We like it.
There seems to be some tech has torn families apart, et cetera, et cetera. If you know more about this, if this happens to be a pet interest of yours, please join our Geneva channel and let us know, because it's definitely fascinating. But this guy's a clown. He is now, I mean, he's now polling 8 points behind Mark Kelly. We are not going to look at any races as won or not important. We obviously last cycle saw some polling. We were supposed to win Maine, and Susan Collins ran away with Maine. But I mean, when we look at what Republicans are kind of, it seems they have decided for themselves that this race is not looking good for them. Mitch McConnell's backed Senate leadership fund has canceled a $9 million ad buy. I guess they don't really think they have an answer to this man saying Ted Kaczynski was an underrated thinker. And a new poll showed Kelly, like I said, leading Masters by 8 percentage points. Was reading some like local things this morning, and it sounds like Arizonans are really like, they're sick of the race overall, and they're sick of this guy. He keeps changing his tune. He's not likable. Like, some people can be good politicians and aren't likable, and that's unfortunate, but I don't think this guy is either. And like, there's nothing wrong with Mark Kelly. He's fairly moderate. I think, you know, since he's been in office, he throws up the brakes, you know, to be able to say like, I want to check to make sure it's good for Arizona. Seems pretty fairly popular there, though it is, you know, some purple parts of the state. But
he actually does the stuff that Kyrsten Sinema is like playing this game to seem like
exactly
she's doing. Like, he is a genuine senator from Arizona who wants to represent the interests of his state, which is a purple state. He takes that into consideration in making his choices, but you don't see him doing this stuff that Kyrsten Sinema does, because he's looking at the exact same fucking electorate and saying, no, they don't want me to be, they don't give a fuck about the 60 volt threshold for the filibuster. They want X, Y, and Z. Kyrsten Sinema is making the decisions she's making because it's not based on the electorate. It's based on, how do I, as a first-term senator from Arizona, become one of the top names that people would know in the Senate? How do I get to be buddy-buddy with Senate leadership? How do I get healthcare representatives calling my ass on the phone? I do this.
And I, you know, the Kyrsten Sinema of it all just kind of reminds me of like the opposite of Liz Cheney, which is like, she knows that she's not going to get reelected again. So she's going out with guns blazing and just being as brazen as possible.
And picking up as much connections and goodwill with the rich people that can give her a fancy job after this.
Yeah, exactly. Because people, you know, some like bad faith leftists are like, Liz Cheney's gonna be running for Democrats. And it's like, Democrats are not gonna vote for Liz Cheney, but she's gonna get a good job and she's probably gonna get a lot of speaking engagements. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with Kirsten. Miss Kirsten's gonna have some fancy dumbass job and she's gonna be speaking in the University of Louisville and all these dumbass Mitch McConnell centers for the rest of her stupid Mitch match pattern.
She could be the house life. Mom at Mitch McConnell's fraternity.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah.
And so, do her marathons in peace without anyone bothering her about the dying. I just got to say,
also, too, Blake Masters looks like a Disney villain.
Yeah, it's bad.
Like, yes. Really, like, he really does.
He looks as bad as he is, which is, he looks as evil and smarmy as he actually is. And that's, I think, partially also his problem is that it's just like, you look at him and see what's coming out of his mouth and you're just like, ah! Oh, my God. Yeah,
too on brand.
And he is one of several candidates, including Herschel Walker, who is just so bad. And Republicans have really set themselves up. I mean, some of these races that were like toss-ups have shifted to Democrats. So it'll be a very interesting cycle. Now we need to touch on an international story because this is obviously really dominating the headlines. Protests continue in Iran, where security forces have killed demonstrators speaking out against the death of Mahsa Amini in police custody. She was a 22-year-old Kurdish woman living in Iran. She had been detained for allegedly violating the law that she must be veiled, that she must wear a hijab. This is a law that the morality police have enforced a lot more since their new president and new government was kind of installed. Like, the clerics basically vetoed a lot of the other candidates, and this president has been a lot more hardline and has enforced the hijab laws, which previously were not enforced. And so this has been happening ongoing. She was taken into police custody and died, and that's mysterious and not allowed. And this converges with a lot of other huge challenges for the Iranian people and just really botched efforts by the government and just oppression all the time. The economy has faced challenges, especially since the U.S. left the Iran deal. That's still going on. The reason why these protests are such a huge deal is because protesting is so dangerous in Iran. There's been many instances of mass protests in history with very well-documented results. It's not like, I wonder if I'll put my life at risk tonight if I go out there. Like, that's just, you're knowingly doing that. So most of the reporting I've seen has stressed that the desperation that these people must be feeling to take this risk cannot be overstated. Protesters are calling for a lot of things, for international investigations into how they've treated this, into what happened in that case, and just other instances over recently. They're calling for the fall of the Ayatollah. They're just calling for something needs to change, and we need to take power back. And in response to the protests, Iran has cut off internet access and poured disinformation and fear into what media is allowed through. There really is not a ton of media coverage of the protests from journalists. Most of what I've seen looks, you can't really tell where it's from. That's why I haven't posted it, and I don't think people should post it, really, because you're not really supposed to, like, it's dangerous. There could be people in the Iranian government trying to figure out who these people are. You don't know where they've come from. You don't know who is in the pictures that, you know, shouldn't be seen. And that's because the journalists who actually know how to publish clips, like, in a safe way, these citizen journalists have had no choice because most journalists are banned from the country. It's dangerous to operate there. They're, like, last on the list for world press freedom. So it's a really, really violent and important protest movement that is struggling to get coverage because Iran is literally turning the internet off, and it's kind of hard for some communication platforms to operate there and ensure they can keep their lines open because of certain sanctions. So the U.S. government has tried to say, here is a special license to work around to make sure that, like, you can, like, Signal or whatever can provide services to the people there without coming under fire for violating U.S. sanctions. But it's just a convergence of, like, so many global issues and a regional issue, and, you know, really, really painful to watch what people have to go through there, and also not really know what's happening because it's being suppressed. I mean, we know what's happening and nothing is in doubt. That's not what I'm saying, but it's, like, hard to get a real sense of, you know, 41 people have died, but
that's, like,
I've seen
less,
reports
yeah.
is that sounds low, and I see reports that that's protesters, then I see reports that that's a mix of police. The Iranian government is trying really, really hard to sow different disinformation. There was reports of a young woman who was killed that I've since heard that I saw some major outlets post that I've since heard might be fake to cause, like, fear. But then that's also, I mean, this is why these news cycles are so tricky and important, is because it's like you need to elevate what they're doing and also be mindful of how certain framing benefits them. They would love for it to look like the West is meddling in Iranian affairs by saying all of this is fake and by planting fake stories itself so that they're all fake. So it's just like,
it's well, yeah, a really often used tactics of hardcore regimes is when there are protest movements to try to say, oh, this is the U.S. outside agitating because we have.
Fair.
We, you know, we've done that in the past, but now it is like, it becomes really tricky because a lot of times really bad governments will use that as a cover to, for their own, like, to cover up and not respond to legitimate protests. Another aspect of this that, you know, is just, I think, worth mentioning is that Mahsa Amini was a Kurdish woman.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
And there is a lot of, you know, I don't know if it technically counts as like racism or what the exactual ism is that comes into play in Iran, but Kurdish people are disproportionately policed there. So that's also kind of part of it is that there's this Kurdish woman and that might have come into play as to why the morality police chose to snatch her up and target her kind of in the first place.
Yeah, I was going to mention that yeah, they have, you know, all over, not just in Iran, but even in Turkey and in different regions, like following what those people have to go through. It just has so many parallels to like things that we go that happens in the U.S., which can also feel like, why, you know, I mean, that's a criticism when U.S. gets like into things with China and stuff. It's like, well, y'all are no different.
I get what you're saying, Millie. And like, obviously what's happening in Iran is a very extreme example, but like we are seeing the erosion of women's autonomy over their bodies here in this country. We've talked about it right here on this podcast. Amanda, you just had that really awesome conversation with Kristen Conger about like conspiracy theories that are popping up on TikTok. And there is a very weird undercurrent of the right wing right now that literally is people who say they want women to go back to the home. They want women to not be covered in like the Islamic way of being covered, but that, yeah, they want your ass at home. They want you no credit card, da da da. Like that movement is gaining traction here in the United States again. And if you look at Iran and think it can't happen here, just know that like Iran in the 1970s, women who are alive in Iran today did not live under this kind of law.
Iranian history is fascinating. And there are just so many, like, I try to stop myself from like comparing things to the West because that makes them good. But, and so I'm mindful of that, especially like this week, again, you see a lot of images of the 1970s, like, when there was like a lot more liberal appearing dress, and there were times where like there are just the people there and the population was very well educated. There were a lot of really strong institutions, and there were so many times where like the country could have like gone in such a different direction, but because of power struggles and because of like ego and because of theocracy and religious fanaticism,
and us meddling, did not, and exactly messing around in their business. Also, right.
That's the only thing that they have that we don't. We also have religious fanatics, and we also have a disdain for education sometimes. And so, I think that comparison is like, you know, not to make it about us, but there are a lot of parallels in terms of like anything can happen because it was very unusual when it happened there as well and surprising. We'll keep an eye out for resources, but like I said, there's like not much. I think like Elise wrote in the newsletter, like amplifying specifically the words of women in Iran. It's hard. Not all of them can access internet. So that's what's challenging. But there are Iranian women everywhere, Iranian American women. There are a lot of Iranians in Canada who are really turning out. So just like I would just encourage people to try to share things that people from the region or with familiarity in the region are sharing. Because in moments like this, like I hate when I see just like some white guy with a check mark go viral for sharing a unverified protest clip. And it's like, don't get your coverage there. Try to get it from the people that are actually on the ground, even though that can be challenging. That is our show for today. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Millie Tamaras.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast. Bye. The Betches Up Podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales Pico, and Rebecca Sousmacat. Editing by Rebecca Sousmacat. Social media by Amanda Duberman and Bridget Swartz. Be sure to follow @Betches_sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails at suppod@betches.com.
Betches.